Hey, Bobby Manning here, recording this on the eve of Celtics-Nets. Another matchup between these two teams. Celtics took the first two on the road. And we have Dome Theory 105 speaking with Matt Brooks of Nets Daily. This was recorded right after Kevin Durant got injured. But still, I think a good conversation about the state of the Nets. A state of Ben Simmons, who ended up scoring 0 points the night we recorded that, shockingly. And his continued injuries, continued road back from whatever he's going through. I think one of the stories of the NBA heading into the trade deadline. But let's talk about that deadline quick, because it doesn't look like it's going to be a super exciting deadline, particularly on the Celtics front. Though there are some stories I'm watching. Let me run through them real quick here. We got D'Angelo Russell in Minnesota. He's entering free agency, playing well. Wolves are in the mix. Towns is hurt. But they haven't looked great all season. They've looked good at points. Rudy's looked good at points. But nothing there has looked great except Anthony Edwards' occasional spurts of greatness. I'm looking at Miami. Kyle Lowry, benched in fourth quarters last week. Do they finally move on from him? Of all the weirdness I've talked about with the Heat this year, his situation seems to be at the center of it. All the commentary over the offseason about him getting in shape, Eric Spoelstra's weird comments that night, dancing around, actually addressing his game and what he looks like on the floor. And then, of course, you have the Duncan Robinson situation always floating around there. It feels like they've wanted to get off of him forever. So I think the Heat are in position to get active. The Suns, of course, are. Matt Ishiba, their new owner, is going to take over the team in time for the deadline. Gives them a much more flexible position going into that day rather than the awkward position that Robert Sarver's veto power, if it wasn't finalized by then, would have allowed him. Jay Crowder has to move before then. I don't care if they get pennies at this point. Got to put that in the rear view. Allow him to go to Milwaukee, and it seems like he almost certainly will go to Milwaukee. I'd keep an eye on that. Eric Gordon, Grayson Allen, three-way trade with Jay Crowder heading to Milwaukee, and he'd fit well there, I think. But who knows what he looks like? That's a real problem for his value right now. I'm also looking at the Raptors. Are they going to blow it up? Are they going to blow it up big time? I don't know. OG Anunoby, if they get blown away, I think they'll move him. I've seen reports the last few days that they'd like to get blown away on his front because the injuries with him, and he just sprained his wrist. Sort of a freak injury, going to miss some time here, a few games at least. And they talked with the Knicks, according to reports. That seems to make a ton of sense. The Knicks have picks that they didn't use in the Donovan Mitchell trade. I don't think there's a big fish waiting for them at any point in the near future. So get better now. I don't even think about putting RJ Barrett in that deal, if necessary, if it saves you picks, because honestly, I'm not all that impressed with Barrett still into this new, I think, third year of his career at this point, 19, 20, 21, 20. I mean, he's a handful of years into his career at this point, just extended. So I'd say he's in his fourth, right? I don't see it. The shooting's not there. The frontline playmaking isn't there. The finishing's solid, but he's not one of their main ball handlers. And if you're not a shooter, not a great active off-ball player, I don't know where that leads you. Nets probably stay in pat, even though they have some flexibility. Same with the Celtics. Nuggets put them in that boat, even though they're floating Bones Highland. The Blazers could do something small. Josh Hart, Yusuf Nurkic, that's what you hear around them. I don't see anything coming together there, though the Pelicans have some flexibility as well. Maybe they revisit what they did last year with CJ McCollum and try to switch some strengths on each side of that. You could also say the same for the Nuggets and Pelicans. The Pelicans can do a lot. I don't know if they will, but they've lost 9 straight, so they're in a little bit of a position of desperation, even if it's just a small one. Elsewhere, Lakers don't think they can do a lot. They get Rui Hachimura. He comes to the Garden for that classic the other night, and man, do we have to talk about that. The Lakers-Celtics game, best theater I've seen on an NBA court outside of that Tatum game winner and all the drama of Kyrie Irving's return for the playoffs last year, which he'll do again tonight. I'm interested in what's going to happen there. They played a all-time Celtics-Lakers game. The LeBron finish, clearly fouled by Tatum. It happens. The fallout of that, just astonishing. All the apologies from the refs, from the league. The league put out a two-minute report that night. I can't believe it. I guess I can. That LeBron wasn't teed up on that play, the way he jumped along the sideline and fell to the floor. I mean, all Schroeder did earlier in the game was fall to the floor, and he picked up a technical. The theater of that game was incredible. Patrick Beverley, who I met before the game at Sippin' Tea, introduced himself to me. Nice exchange, nice guy, was interested in how long I'd been reporting on the team. Grabs a camera from, I don't know, a reporter, a cameraman, someone on his sideline. I don't know where it came from. I thought it was someone's phone. Maybe a fan was berating him and he took his phone. But no, he took someone's camera, like DCLR camera, and took it to the ref and showed him and gets teed up. And then the Lakers fall in overtime. I don't know what the Lakers can do at the deadline. Those picks seem off limits. I wouldn't be stunned if they do look to maybe move one and protect it and do something small, though, because they need to supplant this. Russell Westbrook, who is the betting favorite now for Sixth Man of the Year, Anthony Davis and LeBron James Core, which I think could be fun in a play-in tournament. They don't have their pick. It's actually a swap this year, too, so if they could somehow pass the Pelicans, their outlook doesn't look as bad as it did earlier this season, though it still doesn't look great. That roster around LeBron is astonishing to look at. It really is. And he's part of it. He deserves some blame there. He's about to pass Kareem. Super intrigued by that. Monumental achievement that probably stacks what missing a couple of rings didn't on his legacy. So I'm really excited for that night whenever that comes. Too bad it didn't come at the Garden that night, but we did get something special for that event. Speaking of those betting odds on Russell Westbrook, we're brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline, the top spot to place your sports wagers this year. I know legal sports betting just came to Massachusetts, but BetOnline, still the preeminent spot to get your sports information, sports bets in. I love the lines. They got some good numbers over there. I see the Super Bowl at 2 as the Super Bowl approaches, and this is where you're going to want to be on Super Bowl Sunday. First Sunday I ever used this app was Super Bowl 2020 between the Buccaneers and Chiefs. Tom Brady retiring today, so that'll go down as Brady's last title. A lot of fun that night. Props galore. The line's actually down to 1, so it is essentially a pick'em between the Chiefs and Eagles. Better odds for the Chiefs, and of course you could go money line there, plus 102. That is a really good bet, unless you're nervous about Pat Mahomes' ankle. So you can't go wrong there. Either way, tons of props, hockey, football, basketball, it's all there. Even some baseball futures if you're really itching for baseball season. Spring training just a couple weeks away. So all of that's available and more. MMA, golf, you think it, you can find it there, along with all the futures, live lines, props, same game parlays. There's so much you can do over on betonline.ag, not to mention their casino. And you can get 50% back on your first deposit by using the code CLNS50. That's CLNS50. BetOnline, where the game starts. Tons of other sponsors to tell you about here at the network. HelloFresh, who I love. HelloFresh.com/Garden61 is going to get you 61% off your first order over there. And free shipping. Just a phenomenal deal. I love their fish box, but there's something for everyone, meat, vegetarian. You can customize it, and it's going to come at the same time every week on ice. So many great meals over there, and it's all fresh. But the name HelloFresh, how could it be any different? HelloFresh.com/Garden61 to support the Garden Report, CLNS, and me. You can go to RocketMoney.com/Garden to download their app and potentially save hundreds on unused subscriptions. The yearly ones kill you. You go over to your apps, you see what you downloaded, what you've gotten a free trial for, what you've been paying for that you didn't even realize, and you can delete it right in the app or even get a better deal. That's the beauty of Rocket Money. RocketMoney.com/Garden. And, of course, Athletic Greens. AthleticGreens.com/Garden is going to get you 5 free travel packs of vitamins, minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, and more. And of course, a year's supply of immune boosting vitamin D when you head over there as well. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. Now, Matt Brooks joining us for our Nets conversation. And thank you for tuning in here on Dome Theory. More to come soon. Stay tuned to our Twitter page, subscribe, Stitcher, iTunes, more, Spotify as well. Good spot to listen. Check out the Garden Report tonight, Celtics Nets post game show. And we'll see you back here soon on Dome Theory. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 105 on the eve of Celtics Nets here. And we're going to look past Celtics Pelicans tonight as we record this. There is a game at the Garden tonight before the Celtics hit the road through the weekend for Brooklyn and Charlotte miniseries coming up. But this is a big one. The Nets have loomed ever since they fired Steve Nash and hired Jacques Vaughn as their interim. The whole Ime Udoka fiasco, I think, is what me and Matt Brooks were talking about the last time we were here from Nets Daily. Great to have you back, Matt. And it's unbelievable. It really wasn't even that long ago we talked on here about whether this whole Nets thing was going to fall apart completely. And that's where I was. I kind of forget where you were at that time, but
oh, I was.
What's happened since?
I definitely was. I was like one of the biggest this is over doomers. I was convinced. Felt like I had pretty good idea of what was going on. And they kind of, you know, they put Vaughn in place, and it felt like it was kind of a, well, we don't really know what else to do, so we're just gonna, you know, put Vaughn in place, who's been here for a while, and this team is really just found itself with him at the helm. They've obviously gone on longest winning streak of the season, 12 games, and just kind of honed into that identity that we know they could have had. Also, a lot of this has come with they've had really good health. And that is probably the biggest thing of anything, is these guys are just finally on the floor together.
Yeah, and obviously it's the offense that's taken off. The Celtics were in that top spot offensively through the start of the season, really through Christmas or so there, until Denver caught them. But the Nets, since that Vaughn change, have been putting up like that 117, I forget what the number is, as of a couple games ago, offensive rating. That's, you know, his historic number. They obviously have the record from a couple years ago with Harden, Irving, and Durant. But that's been in place. Durant was playing at MVP level before the injury, and we'll get to that in a second here. But I'm stunned by the defense. Defense moving in the top 10 territory. It was 29th under Nash to start the year, which was really what made this team such a disaster. The Ben Simmons, Nick Claxton things working surprises me. There's just so much that surprised me about this run, because in our previous episodes, we've talked about how it just didn't seem like the Nets had the personnel to play good defense, never mind switch like they do.
Yeah, it's really interesting how they've settled into this. You know, they've kind of settled into having these two roaming large, like, you know, essentially 7-foot defenders, which I'm sure Boston fans can relate to a little bit just based on how they played last year. Nets do it differently. They're not having KD free safety as much as maybe somebody like Rob Williams was. But the general idea is there, in that you have these two shot blockers. One's pretty much a primary shot blocker. The other one's lurking on the weak side, and Nick Claxton and Kevin Durant. And that's worked out really well. They've been super stingy in isolations. I want to say they're a top of the league.
That's right.
So this team can just really guard the ball well. And they have the shot blocking, you know, kind of supporting all this. And Nick Claxton, who's been a defensive player of the year, and Durant, who's had maybe his best defensive season, at the very least in Brooklyn, but one of his best defensive seasons, period. So it's a simple solution in a sense when you talk about it, but it is it's working so far.
Yeah, and that isolation stats is going to be super interesting on Thursday, because again, I'm just stunned to see the Nets doing that, a top two isolation defense team. They're really tied with Memphis effectively for that top spot, and the Celtics are way down the list, and they were number one by far last year. This year they are 25th guarding isolation, giving up about a point per possession. So that kind of shows some of the holes in the Celtics defense, and Rob's back now, which is going to be a big difference. Looks like he's going to rest tonight and play on Thursday. Horford will probably sit the game out. But the Celtics defense has slipped a little bit. They've creeped back in the top 10 territory, but there's probably a conversation between these two teams right now, at least where they're at today, in terms of who has the better defense, which is just unbelievable after last year's sweep.
Yeah, it's been interesting, and the Nets have nailed some of the small things too, even just like their rotations on the weak side, whether it's like things like Xing out or you know, just rotating down and sinking down and helping when you need to. Those things have been cleaned up too. So it isn't, yes, they have these like really good individual defenders, and they've helped their personnel with guys like Yuta Watanabe. You know, TJ Warren's been pretty good defensively. Royce O'Neal's been pretty good defensively. They've really, you know, gotten a better cast in a sense, but they're also just working on a string a lot better.
And so you mentioned all those wings, Ben Simmons. They got a cast of guys that could potentially get them through this Kevin Durant absence, which is just going to be massive. I mean, everything revolved around him there. His, like, really as good of a performance as he's ever had to start this year lifted them in so many different ways. And now he goes down with the MCL sprain again. Same injury as last year. I think it cost him about 6 weeks last year. They're hoping it's going to be a little bit less this time, but still a significant amount of time that could really shift their standing here. How are they going to get through this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I'm watching for is just where the creation comes from. So the secret to the Nets this year really has been that they've gotten constant production of like really superstardom production on the floor for 48 minutes. The Kyrie minutes, just Kyrie, have been a huge positive, which has not been the case really, I think, since he's gotten to Brooklyn, at least when he's played with KD. So those minutes have been a plus. And then obviously anything KD does is a plus because Durant's having, you know, a just ridiculous season. So it'll be interesting to see now that those minutes by Kyrie are kind of like your basis of what your offense is. What is it going to be after that? Is it going to be a Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, TJ Warren lineup that's going to work? It's just trying to come up with different lineups outside of anytime we have Kyrie out there, we feel pretty good about that. What do those look like? So I think that'll be the thing I'm looking for the most. The shooting, they've done a really good job at finding 3-and-D guys this offseason. Defensively, Nick Claxton will be manning the back line. He'll have more, you know, I guess more of a load on his shoulders in terms of what he has to do night to night, but he's still going to do his thing. So the big thing will just come down to creation for this team.
Yeah, and you do wonder about defense too, what direction that's going to go in, because Durant was a big part of that, 1.5 blocks per game, able to do a ton at the wing. It's almost, you compare it to Boston last year, you think of those three guys across the back line, it's almost like what Cleveland was doing last year when they were playing number one defense with Markkanen and Mobley and Allen, not quite that mm-hmm. level of defenders, but close when you think about what all three of those guys are capable of at their peak there. Where's Simmons at in all this now? Because I think what's good for him is that he's been able to take a back seat offensively. He's had some bigger assist games lately, but it feels like he'll have to do a little bit more when you talk about creation with Durant out.
Yeah, I mean, he just, like, it's really as simple as he needs to put his head down and you know, consistently. Vaughn talked about this today. Jacques Vaughn, head coach of the Nets, talked about how they just want consistent downhill, or just, I think it was just consistent aggression from Ben. And he was talking about in the game that the Nets pretty recently had against the Pelicans, Ben had a couple of really nice sequences. He pressed CJ McCollum full court, got this really nice drive, I think dish to Nick Claxton. And it was really good first 6 minutes, but he's talking, Vaughn wants to see more from Simmons, you know, at minute 18, minute, whatever, 30. And I think that's kind of going to be the big thing for the Nets, is they now need that 30 minute production from Ben. It can't just be in spurts, especially at beginnings of games. They need him to be that, you know, in large part second star, at the very least, like really capable ball handler behind Kyrie.
Yeah, for sure. And I still want to see more from him in that sense. We all knew it'd be a good fit if he could just fit in around those two. But now it is, like you said there, a time where he's going to have to put his head down, create, and do some of the stuff he did in Philly, which we just haven't seen still. It's good to see him get more comfortable and actually look like he can fit in this whole dynamic that they're creating there. But it's going to change without Durant, because that guy's just drawing doubles and just like has such great gravity, and I don't even know if Irving can replicate that. It's going to be so interesting how they adapt around this, and it really could bolster Jacques Vaughn's coach of the year candidacy, which I think in the recent media poll they did of 30 teams, he was pretty significantly ahead of everybody in that. So what's working for him as head coach? What's the biggest difference Nash to Vaughn that you're seeing?
It just seems like the guys seem to, I don't know what the word is. There's just a sense of buy-in that wasn't there with Nash, especially at the very end. And I mean, that's like 97% of coaching. I think a lot of it is just having the right personality in place for the right group. And that's kind of what this has been for the Nets this year with Vaughn. This is just a guy that the guys in the locker room really seem to respect. He's been pretty straightforward, and he really preaches simplicity is his big thing, because, you know, I think in large part he believes that this group, which is mostly a veteran laden group, can sort of figure out things on the go. And that's really worked. And it's, you know, I do think he's similar in a lot of ways to Nash. There are just a couple of things that maybe you and I aren't aware of, but there's things within the locker room that are definitely making that difference. But I do think the biggest thing is just buy-in and health too. I mean, I'm going to bring it up one more time. You know, having KD and Kyrie on the floor with Ben Simmons just for as many games as they have. I mean, I think that the three stars of Simmons, KD and Kyrie have long surpassed how many minutes KD, Kyrie and Harden had together. So, I think it's a combination of things, but definitely having the right guy seems to make the difference.
Yeah. And if there are a lot of similarities, you do have to think health's a big part of that. And you look back at 2021 under Nash, could have gone a lot differently if there was health, and you know that for sure based on how that Bucks series was going before Harden and Irving exited it. So it, maybe Nash would have gone in a better direction if there just wasn't all the different things that popped up over that time. I tended to not think that was the case, because I just didn't think he adjusted well. I didn't think he emphasized defense enough. That much was clear. Yeah. So there are definitely, I think, some schematic differences. But you almost wonder what could have been, because he's been here the whole time. His interim in 2020 and went okay. I know they got swept in that series, but they finished the year strong under him. And that's the point where they could have just named him the coach then, and he stays on through all the coaching changes that happen in between. But it almost seems to be happening, I guess not too late now, because they still could contend for a championship this year. But it seems like their best opportunities at really going for a win in the past.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we could look back. There's, I mean, even like last year, like the Nets, they were number one seed through, I think, like December, and KD went down at around the same time.
Yeah, that's so, where you look at health again. Yeah,
you know, I do think that there are things that Vaughn's doing better, like his usage of timeouts, even just in game. You mentioned the adjustments thing. That's one of the big things that sticks out. A lot of those are usually right after there's a defensive miscue. Nash was kind of a like, we're just going to sort of play through it and just hope these things sort themselves out. And Vaughn kind of, you know, he rules a little bit more than Iron Fist, I guess, in a sense of that he if he sees something he doesn't like, he's going to call timeout, which is that really seems to make a difference for this group.
Yeah, for sure. I'm wondering, the biggest thing I'm curious about coming into this episode and this matchup is Nick Claxton, because we all remember the lasting memory of him in that series between these two teams last year. I think going 1 of 11 at the line, just really flaming out at that center spot. And I remember him playing with Harden, just dropping pick and roll passes. And he's got this great physique for that position as a roller and all the skills you would think would be perfect for the modern center position. But he just couldn't seem to put it all together. And now, again, it just seems like from Nash to Vaughn, he's become one of the better defensive centers in the league. I know he's way up there in blocks. Offensively, I don't really have a great feel for how he's playing, but this guy just seems to be all putting it together on the fly right now. What's been the big key for him?
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides of the ball. So defensively, he's still maintained, you know, he's bulked up a little bit, but he's still one of the best switch bigs in the league. I think he's 74th percentile, somewhere around there in terms of guarding isolations, which is one of the best marks for centers right now. But he's also just gained a better awareness of when to help as, you know, the low man or when to rotate over and extinguish fires, even when that isn't his rotation. He has more scheme versatility. They can play him in drop. They can have him hedge a little bit. They can obviously keep him as a switch big, which is something he's been able to do since he pretty much came into the league. Offensively, ton of growth there. His hands have improved for number one, but also his sense as a screener has improved a lot. So his timing when he comes out of those screens has improved. When he rolls, he's better at rolling, you know, like not rolling into teammates, for example. And then the last thing I think that's really improved is his offhand. You'll see him and they're a little awkward looking, but he's developed his offhand in terms of making these little hook shots. If he has a mismatch or even if he's down low enough to the rim, he's got a center on him, he feels pretty confident flicking up this little hook. That was just a shot he didn't have. I remember against Boston 2 years ago, not last year's first round flameout, but the year before that, the Nets had a couple possessions where Nick ended up with the ball. And I think he was guarded by like Evan Fournier and he just couldn't do anything. He couldn't post him up. He couldn't even get a shot up. That's a completely different Nick now. He's taking advantage of those situations.
Yeah, it's super impressive. And he's a great example of a draft success for this group. And they've had some. He's probably the biggest one right now in recent years. And he changed his game well for the NBA. It's super impressive. From I think he went to Texas, right, and just had a completely different game there. And you're looking back on him as one of the guys that probably would have gone earlier in his class if you redrafted that one.
Yeah, yeah, he was Georgia. He had a weird
Georgia.
Role.
That's right. Yeah,
he was a weird player because they kind of used him as like a ball handling center. It was very weird. Like his role just didn't make any sense. So that's kind of why he slipped so far. Worked out great for the Nets, obviously. But yeah, it was a weird kind of college project player that's panned out for them pretty nicely.
Yep, for sure. And that's where they stand. So that you have to consider them one of the East contenders now, which shocks me. I think it changes the whole entire dynamic at the top of the East. Cleveland seemed to be a team that was up there. Milwaukee hovering around 500 since their 9-0 start. They've slipped quite a bit, and it's hard not to put the Nets at full strength over them right now, the way they've looked offensively. Things could change there. A lot of different trades could happen. But in terms of stacking them up in the East now, where do they stand among all these different contenders, Philly included as well? You have to probably throw in there too.
Yeah, Philly's in the mix. You know, I'm just not a Milwaukee believer this year.
I'm surprised. Awesome. I've always been the biggest Bucks guy, and you just watch them every night now. No, Middleton too has had an even bigger impact this year. It doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look good. Their half court offense is bottom five. It's not. It's just I don't.
They
believe
got
in...
smoked on Christmas by Boston.
Yeah. It's not good. It looks off. When the Nets smoked them too, and it was like. It just looked odd. Giannis has been really good MVP level, but he also even feels like
not quite the same.
It's weird. It's a weird situation. So I'd probably put Philly over them right now. I'd probably go, I need to see the Nets beat Boston like before I can think about doing, you know, hierarching it a little bit different. So I'm going to probably go Boston, Brooklyn, maybe Philly at number three. And then maybe Milwaukee. I kind of like Cleveland depending on who they play. But they're young, but I do like them. And I think they're a team that they're going to challenge. Like even the Nets, like I actually think that's like not a great matchup for the Nets. Just because the one weakness with the Nets defensively is their point of attack defense. They just, until Simmons kind of looks a little more acclimated, they don't really have anybody to guard these, you know, quick jitterbug guards, which Cleveland definitely has one of in Garland. You could argue they have two of them with Mitchell. It's a really interesting Eastern Conference. I think that's probably what I'd go with right now, but I the team I could probably drop a little bit further is the Bucks, if anybody.
Yeah, more physically imposing bigs there too. I go back to that play-in game last year though, a much worse version of the Nets kind of tore through them. I know it's one game, but it did look like they had the upper hand in that matchup. Whole different dynamic in Cleveland this year with Mitchell coming in, but they don't have wings, which still worries me with them. Like they don't, we're talking like Lamar Stevens, Dean Wade. That's what they're trying to Okoro. Scrap together in the East. Okoro, I don't even think plays in the playoffs if they start today. He can't hit a three, like a single three. So it's tough to stack up with Giannis and Durant and Tatum if you're them with that kind of depth at the wing. And I saw Jake Fisher wrote about them searching for something there, but I don't know how they get it done. They have no picks. They don't have a lot of value to trade. Their roster kind of is what it is at this point. Mobley needs to take a leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tricky part, the Nets just played the Cavs recently. Like what they essentially did was they just sagged off and just clogged, you know, essentially the paint and, you know, got in rebounding position and also just took away driving lanes by sagging off of Okoro, Stevens, and Mobley a little bit when those guys were spaced in the corners. So I do fear that being the case for Cleveland. And that's kind of what happens when you're a young team that isn't fully developed yet in terms of you don't have all the pieces you might need for a championship run, but you go for, you know, a young star like Mitchell and maybe you are a little bit farther along in terms of where you thought you were going to be with this trajectory. So it's, They're dangerous though. They have good players. That's why I look at them.
They're so dangerous. Yeah, you don't want to run into them. There's some sneaky, because you could potentially consider them a 5 seed. The way it's looking for Milwaukee, they could slip to 5. But in terms of pedigree, they're probably 5th in line. And you got a Chicago that plays Boston really tough last night. They might sneak through the play-in tournament if they keep this all together. There's a lot of dangerous teams lower down the standings. You got to consider Indiana, too. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if Indiana pushed any one of the top teams 6-7 games.
Chicago's the one I look at because Chicago's what, like 6-1 against all the top teams in the East right now?
9-2 now against the top four. Yeah.
They're okay. So they've moved up a lot more ahead since I last looked at this. They're just the classic, like, they don't wake up for games against bad teams, but they do seem to play these top end teams really well. And if you can just like get through the playoffs, I don't know if that's a sustainable way to go far in the playoffs. I don't love
with them. It's just like what we're talking about with Brooklyn. It's that health thing. And Lonzo's, who knows when Lonzo's going to play again, probably not this year, but 1 year ago today, or at least a couple of days ago, they're the 1 seed in the East.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, they have the talent. Like, it's a team you don't want to play, and they have just even the way they, you know, they have a stretch big in Vucevic, you know, scores that are like Levine's been playing great lately. DeRozan's always a threat. So they're the team I look at, and I'm like, I just would not want to play that team. Like, you imagine you're Boston and Brooklyn, and you're like, all right, you know, we got the 1 and 2 seeds. If Brooklyn can survive this stretch without KD. And you have to play Chicago in round one. It's like, wouldn't want to do it.
It's a terrifying thought for Boston right now, for sure. Especially where they've been blown out twice in Chicago this year. Let's talk about this matchup tomorrow. Real quick, though, we'll give a quick shout out to the network sponsors here joining us on the Garn Report this week. And for the foreseeable future, good friends at HelloFresh, HelloFresh.com/Garden21 is going to get you 21 free meals and free shipping. Forgot to mention that on the Garden Report after last game. Loved it. Again, one of my favorite sponsors we've had. The food's awesome. Comes packaged, cold, fresh. I got all the fish meals that they had, bass, salmon, some salads in there as well. It was amazing. I'm about to order again with my own money, for real. We've all done that the last round. And again, it's well worth it. You're going to get 21 free meals. You can get a wide range of great meals, whatever your diet restrictions are. They're going to have options for you. So head over there, HelloFresh.com/Garden21. Of course, a shout out as well to our friends at Athletic Greens. There they are. AthleticGreens.com/Garn gets you 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. That's vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. Everything you need for your nutrition is pretty much in here, along with a year's supply of immune-boosting vitamin D. Super important in the winter, short days. Get that vitamin D for a whole year, along with 5 free travel packs when you go to AthleticGreens.com/Garden. And one more. Rocket Money, rocketmoney.com/garden is going to get you their app, which could potentially save you hundreds in unused subscriptions when you head over there. You might not even know some of the ones that you are subscribed to right now. So head over there, rocketmoney.com/garden. We're overrun with sponsors, Matt. Good times over here at CLNS Media. Let's get back to Celtics Nets tomorrow. Again, looking like no Durant, no Horford probably. Rob should be available if he's going to sit tonight and be, you know, maybe 30 minutes worth of playing time. He was not a guy that we saw in this matchup last time. And the Celtics played great defense nonetheless there. Pretty gritty, grindy matchup between these two last time. Tatum had a great game rolling. They had a tough time containing him on the Brooklyn side, but they go on a 12-game win streak right after that. What are you anticipating? And what are some of the keys to this game?
Whew. You know, it's lots changed with this. I had this matchup circled like everybody coming into the year. This is the one that, you know, there's been some fun matchups for the Nets. But this is what I was pretty excited about. Learned that Boston was on a back-to-back. Factored that in. Still was very excited for this. And then this KD injury happened. So I think, honestly, from my side of things, as much as I am excited for this matchup, I'm personally just watching to see like what the Nets rotations look like. Cause I think This is going to be a little bit of a
feeling out game. Yeah, this is game one without Durant. Yeah.
Game one without Durant. This is going to be the feeling out game. So you're going to see what combinations work, what don't. It'll be interesting to see. Kyrie is just hasn't been great in this matchup. And it always feels like Boston's length and positional versatility. This is one of the few matchups where he just can't quite get his shots up the way he necessarily does against other teams. We've seen him have really good games, like game one of last year's first round series. But in large part, I just feel like those like windows of opportunity aren't there for him as much. So that'll be something I'll be watching. I'm trying to remember if Simmons played last time against Boston.
He did not.
So that's another one we're going to look at. What does it look like? How does Boston defend him? Are they going to give him the Bruce Brown treatment that we saw in last year's playoffs and kind of sag off of him and say, hey, we're going to trust our length and the way we can cover up the floor and assume that this guy isn't going to hurt us. So I think those are all things we'll be watching. A lot of fun things, despite not having Durant, just in terms of like things we can learn from this game.
Yeah. Like you said, Irving 7-21 in that last matchup. Durant committed 8 turnovers. They keyed on him successfully again, though. He had a great shooting night at 13-24 from the field. Royce O'Neal struggled. Harris had a solid game. Claxton 1-6 at the free throw line. So Nets gave away a lot of opportunities in that one and only ended up scoring 92 points. Celtics weren't great offensively either outside of Brown and Tatum, but Brown at 34. Tatum 29, that's become more the norm for those two, and they racked up steals and blocks as well, 6 and 4 mm-hmm. of those between them. They turned it up defensively for that game, and that has been the story for the Celtics this year, is when they really want to, they can turn up the heat defensively and just become a menace on that end, and they did it without Rob last time, playing with a smaller lineup. They start Grant in that game, so there was no Marcus Smart that night. He's kind of up in the air for this one. He's questionable tonight with the knee contusion. If he doesn't play tonight, guess he could potentially play tomorrow, but we'll see. Maybe he misses both games. Mm. That one's tougher to tell, but he wasn't there last game either. So Celtics, the offense has slipped over the last month or two here, where I guess we're in the month two of that regression now. And it's tough to really point to specifically why. Brown and Tatum will continue to play at a high level. I guess the passing isn't there at the high level. I mean, they only had 3 assists between those two to start this game last month. And the shooting certainly has slipped off for the role players. I mean, Derek White's down to like 25% from 3 since his hot start. Hauser isn't as much of a factor anymore. Brogdon's still playing well, but Al Horford, even Grant Williams, not quite the same level that he was early this year. So that historic shooting you were seeing from this team has slipped. And they've been a jump shooting team, which probably scares you to some degree coming into a game like this, because if they're 40-plus, they're going to win with the volume that they shoot at. But it's also tough to find alternatives outside of Brown and Tatum if other guys aren't hitting their jump shots.
Yeah, they're a funny team just in terms of the way they play. Like, the one thing, I mean, the Nets are kind of in that boat now where they don't have a ton of methods there of winning games now. Like, it's going to be what Kyrie can create, out of the pick and roll with Nick and Ben. And it's just going to be like, hey, are they able to stumble on other pockets of offense? Is Ben Simmons and Seth Curry in DHOs, is that going to be something that they can get some good offense out of? Is TJ Warren able to make an impact? I remember Hauser had a huge block on TJ in the last time these two teams played. Is he able to, play with a little bit of extra oomph out there? So it's I think both teams are struggling to build identities now outside of what they're getting from their stars.
Yeah, for sure. And Grant's picked it up. I think he's a key to that. You look different in that Chicago game when he's out there and Tatum can use him as an outlet. And this is the key for Tatum. So as I mentioned earlier, that media survey came out, and this guy had a stranglehold on MVP after Curry got hurt there. And now he's behind Luka and Jokic in that mix. Statistically, it's hard to argue against that. Even impact, those two guys have just been head and shoulders above him, at least over the last month or so here. So he's in the mix still, but you look at even that stat I just threw up, 1 assist, 9 turnovers the last time these two teams met. It's that passing element that comes and goes for him. Some nights he's electric. He had a triple double recently, I think, against San Antonio, only his second ever. But he can be great in that department. And sometimes it's just not there for him. And Jaylen Brown really hasn't been there for him this year. So you still look at this team in terms of contending for the finals. The biggest question mark to me with them is that passing, especially when you're going to be looking at a few games without Marcus Smart here, potentially. Like, you lose almost all your facilitating.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, as I said, I think both teams are going to be in that position of they now need to, it's going to be the battle of who can get more creation out of their guys. You know, I think on paper, you look at Boston, you say, well, they have two guys in Jaylen and Jason. But yeah, I mean, you've made the point that kind of comes and goes with both of those guys. So it'll be intriguing. Brooklyn side will be the same thing. What can they get out of Simmons? Can Simmons get downhill and showcase that passing that he's able to do on a regular basis and spray to corner shooters? It's all that first step for him. So different, I guess, conundrums for both teams, but same outcome, I would say.
For sure. So I mentioned this media survey. Have you gotten a chance to take a look at this?
I haven't.
I'll roll through it a little bit here. I don't know exactly when this was conducted, because some of the answers are interesting here, but it does show a recent shift in some of the sentiment for some of these teams. So in terms of winning the East, this was 30 beat writers, one for each team, obviously. 57% see Boston winning the East. Does that surprise you?
No, not necessarily. Maybe that sounds, I don't know how that sounds to you, but to me, I don't think that's necessarily surprising just because, like, as good as the Nets have been, there's just never been a sustained period outside of, you know, I guess they've been good the first half
Brooklyn,
of the season.
Brooklyn comes in at 10%, Milwaukee 33. Those are the only three teams that got votes.
I Brooklyn should be higher than that, but I just think there's been so much that's gone down with the Nets, and especially now you have this injury. I see why they're not the favorite, and I also, as I said, like, I just need to see them beat Boston in any setting. I mean, we're going back, I don't know how many games now that they haven't won against Boston. That needs to change, because at some point, if these two teams hit their full potential in the playoffs, they're going to have to play each other. So I think that makes sense to me. Although I would have Brooklyn's odds a little bit higher.
They're also 10% to win the title. Not a lot of love for the West. Clippers come in at 34% to win the West. Denver 30. In terms of winning the championship, Clippers just at 3% behind Boston, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn. Not a lot of love for the West. Brooklyn's bounce back, most surprising storyline of the season, 20%. Kings come in at 17%. Warriors disappointment, 13%. Other ones here, like I said, Luka, 43% MVP. Jokic, 40%. Giannis and Tatum come in at 7%. KD, 3%. Does he deserve a little bit more love there?
I would say so, yeah. But although this injury, we'll see how long this keeps him out. But I'm assuming this was done before the injury, and in that case, yes.
Definitely before that. Pool six, man. That word doesn't...
Hate it. Hate it.
Brogdon comes in at 23. That one's just such a mixed bag. You got Pool votes, Brogdon votes. Mathurin got 13% alongside Christian Wood. But you also had Russell Westbrook, Malik Monk, Norman Powell, and Bobby Portis getting votes.
Portis should be higher. That's the only one I'll say. The Sixth Man of the Year is like just the worst award. I just feel like it
people
never,
just throw a name out there.
I know. I don't know. I don't know if it's that people like don't watch it enough, or we don't have like specific enough. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it just
also everyone's out all the time, so the six men are always starting.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. In the load management era, like, I just don't think we need Six Man of the Year anymore. It's that one and Clutch Player of the Year. I'm like, I don't know why we have these awards.
Markkanen running away with most improved. That one's not too surprising. I guess Shea at 33 could be higher, but he's right there. Coach of the Year, Vaughn at 43. Willie Green and Joe Mazzulla tied at 23, which I think is fair. And I guess as a clutch player of the award now to throw in the mix there. But those are the big ones. That's up on NBA.com. A bunch of other miscellaneous stuff as well out there. Kevin Durant got toughest to guard. That's not too surprising.
Yeah,
most underrated, Tyrese Halliburton. Can't disagree with that. Yeah, but that's it. That's all we got. Matt Brooks, great to talk to you as always. I'll see you down in Brooklyn tomorrow. Yep. Hopefully I'll make it there. And tonight we got post game Celtics Pelicans. I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on that game as well, ahead of the back-to-back tomorrow. Nets practice today. You can go check out Matt's coverage on Nets Daily and follow him at Matt Brooks NBA. This is Dome Theory 105. Go check us out. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We did Songs of the Year last time we were on here after the new year. So go check that out. And we should be back later this week, probably this weekend, with a new episode as the Celtics hit the road here. A bunch of interviews coming up, lined up. So stay tuned for those at Dome Theory. And once again, thanks, Matt. I'm Bobby Manning. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Safe travels.